Good to see you again. It's been a while.
You're talking about the marketing.
Yeah, the marketing of the NFL.
I'll tell you what, this week, it's not just a game on Sunday.
Right.
I was just talking to someone who works for NFL International, and they were talking about the game in Melbourne next year.
You're right.
In Australia. And they said they go down 3 or 4 weeks ahead of time to set this thing up, and they're doing flag football, and they're doing charitable stuff, and they're doing media and all this, and it's just wild.
Yeah, they have really done an outstanding job, and I think the fact that it's a game a week, which used to be a game a week on Sunday, now it's Thursday or Friday or Saturday or whatever it is, it's just fed a taste for American sports fans.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah,
I think, you know, you and I have the connection about sports, about soccer, of course. I had the pleasure of playing in the National NASL when I was a sportscaster up in Seattle.
That's so cool.
And I wasn't of the caliber of them, but I also, for CBS Sports, did Pelé's game on July 4th, 1976.
Wow.
Against the Seattle Sounders.
Wow.
That game. And it was...
That was in Seattle?
It was up in Seattle,
wow.
Yeah, on July the 4th. And he was kind enough to give me his jersey.
Jeez.
And
where is that? Framed at home?
No, it's not framed. You know,
wow.
It's funny. It's like I don't wear any I've gotten a couple of Super Bowl rings, too. And so I don't wear them because I wasn't part of the broadcasting team or I wasn't one of the players on the team and anything. That's something to me that is to be cherished and put away and just
Amen.
Savored.
Amen.
Savored, you know. I know what you and other pro athletes and whatever the sport is goes through. And I've always been protective to some degree of explaining to people. You don't know how many times people have called me and said, well, that athlete isn't worth that type of money. I said, wait a minute. How many of you get up in the morning, turn on your television or radio, and get talked about?
That's right. You know what someone said to me once? They said, you get paid. Forget about sports or whatever. You get paid based on how many people can do what you do.
That's right.
Right. My mom, I mean, this is hard for me because I played at sport and got paid a lot of money. My mom was a special ed teacher. Changed the world way more than I ever will or would, and got paid 40 or 50 grand a year over the course of her life, right? And so it never made sense to me. But then when someone said that, I said, that's right. You get paid based on how many people. Now, whether you do it well or not, my mom was an excellent teacher. Some teachers are bad, but that's, you know, a lot of people could do it.
What most people do not understand is, first of all, it's a very limited career. Hopefully,
that's
you can
right.
go as long as you can. But in the NFL, it's 4.5 years. And
right.
these guys have been trained all along the way to maybe get to that point where they can play for 4.5 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
But when it ends, boy, a lot of them get lost along the way.
That's right.
Let me just introduce you formally here. Landon Donovan, who I have watched and known for a long time, regarded by many as the greatest American soccer player ever. He played in the MLS and won a record 6 MLS Cups and became both the league's all-time top scorer and the 145 goals at one time. Another player has eclipsed that record. Was that hard for you to see that to happen, or is it, you know, records were made to be broken?
Yeah, I mean, look, we all have ego. We all want to be the best and forever and all that. But in the end, really, who cares? It's like, you know, I did my best. It's like, what are you going to do?
It's like a good meal.
You're going to worry about – yeah, it's like, really, is that what you're going to worry about? It's like, whatever.
He also played in the 2000 Summer Olympic Games, led the U.S. to the quarterfinals of the World Cup in 2002. What was it like transitioning out of playing professional sports, professional soccer? Because a lot of athletes, the one thing I hear from all the athletes, Landon, that I talk to is the one thing that they miss, the comradeship.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that to a great degree. But what was it like for you since this was such a big part of who you were?
So, yeah, there's some depth to this. For most people, most athletes, your sport becomes your identity. And I had some moments through the middle of my career where through lots of therapy and self-reflection and self-awareness, I realized it's not who I am. It is a massive part of me. It's what I do. It's a huge part of me, but it's not who I am in every way. And so because of that, when I stopped playing, it's much easier for me to say, almost be excited about, okay, now I get to like really explore who I am. And a lot of it is vis-a-vis this sport that I know so well, which is what I still do to this day, you know, talk about this sport, be a part of this sport. But it wasn't who I was. For most people, that moment happens the day they retire and they go, oh, crap, what do I do now? Or who am I now? So it was a little bit easier for me in that way. But it is still challenging because you have one skill set you've been honing since I was 2 years old, right? And that's all you sort of knew. And so you have to then find out what you're passionate about.
Do I assume correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, the hardest thing, or maybe it was the easiest thing, was to separate yourself from the identity of being an active soccer player.
Correct.
Because you go
and it's because it's not only how other people view you, it's how you start to view yourself, right? And that's a dangerous path to go down. So I can't tell you how many times people go, oh, are you that soccer player? And I'm like, no, I'm Landon, right? Like, but that's how people know you. And if you start to know yourself that way and get carried away, it can be dangerous.
Yeah. When you look back on your career and the growth of soccer, generally speaking, what amazes you the most about how the sport has come and where it is today?
It's a great question. You know, we live in this era, and this is probably through most of my life too, but people want results, expect results, think things should be better than they are all the time. And I want things to be better. But if I look at when I started my life and where soccer was, which was completely non-existent, right? Like, it was bizarre for me as a kid in Southern California to be playing soccer. And by the way, I grew up with tons of Mexicans and Latinos, so it was less bizarre than other parts of the country, but it was still bizarre. To where it is now, when I go pick up my kids at school, I see maybe one or two NFL jerseys, maybe a Padres jersey. I live in San Diego. I see tons of soccer jerseys, right? And this is just anecdotal, but the sport has come a long way, like a really long way. And we have to appreciate that and be grateful for that.
I remember the last time we talked, I asked you about soccer in this country, and we talked about the fact that soccer, generally speaking, worldwide reflects the country that they happen to live in.
Good memory.
The attitude and style and everything.
That's right.
Where are we then from that standpoint? You're laughing, and I know why. Where are we then from that standpoint
here?
Well,
think about our country. I mean, how do you define our country stylistic? It depends on where you are.
Yeah.
If you're in Boston, it's way different than if you're in Seattle and what you value and versus if you're in L.A. You know, like even growing up, L.A. kids were sort of the soft sunshine kids, more technical, and then we play kids from New York and Boston. They were hard and rugged like Pittsburgh, like the weather, right? So our country has all of this in her. If you're from the South or the Southeast or from Texas, it's all different. So it's hard for us to then have a definitive style or way of play, and I think we're still trying to figure that out. And maybe it's okay at some point to say, we are just a mix of all, just like our country. We are just a mix of all this, and let's embrace that.
How hard is it going to be to bring the chemistry together? Because chemistry, to me, is the key to anything in sports. How one person plays off of another, how the group plays off of each other collectively.
Agreed.
As well. So how where are we there?
Especially in soccer.
In soccer.
With our national team? Or
yes.
Just in
well, I guess you have to divide the two.
It takes time.
Yeah.
It just takes time. You have to play with people over and over. It doesn't matter where you're from, what you do, who you are. Is when you have more time together and playing together, which our national team now is starting to have a lot of, the results get better. It's just, you know, if Ja'Marr Chase has Joe Burrow throwing to him, it's way different than if he has, who was the kid, Browning or whoever was thrown to him. You know, it's just different. It's different. Those guys have been together since college, right? And so all of those connections in soccer matter so much. And because there's so many variables, 11 players on each team, it's not just the quarterback and the receiver. It's all the other things happening. It's vital to have those connections.
Landon Donovan is with us here in Sports Byline USA. The thing that I worry about the most is there's too many chefs stirring the pot, I guess I might say, when it comes to other countries have a single thought process about developing their national team.
Yep.
But here we've got things financially, we've got sponsorship, we've got all of these things, and I'm not quite sure that that is the best for soccer developing worldwide and respectfully for us.
You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you, because I have kids who play soccer, I won't get too into the weeds, but I had a conversation with my kids' soccer club yesterday, and they have a team. My son's team has been together for 2 or 3 years now. These kids, they're 8 years old, love each other. I mean, they love the sport through soccer. The club is deciding to break up their team and move them to different teams and all this because they want to win more, right? And I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing to these kids?
Where's the joy?
What's the point of this? None of these kids, I can promise you statistically, will ever do anything in soccer at a professional level. If one does, it's a miracle. It's literally a miracle. So what are you doing, right? Like, why are we doing that? And we have, and unfortunately in the soccer world in this country, in the soccer space in this country, this happens a lot. Not this specific, but these types of things happen where the player comes second to what the club wants or the team wants, and it's really sad.
I have to ask you this then. Why did the women's team collectively come together, have the success? Did people just think it was an afterthought in some way and so it could grow organically?
Well, what happened with women, and thank God we live in this amazing country, is they were just able to play and compete in college and then eventually have a pro league way before everyone else in the world, right? So, and we have great athletes in this country. So for the longest time, there were only a few countries who really could compete for a World Cup on the women's side. For a while, it was China. Norway was okay for a while. Germany was good for a while. But the U.S., we were just way ahead of everyone, and they did a good job. But now you're seeing in the women's game, the rest of the world's starting to catch up.
Yes.
And it makes it better. It's better for everyone.
Yeah.
But for a long time, there was no competition, really.
I remember when I was televising soccer on CBS Network, and the one thing that made it tough for soccer, both men and I suppose women as well, was that when they shot it too close, you lost the flow of the game. When they shot it too wide, you lost the technique.
Oh, that's interesting.
Of it. And I thought about that later on, and you know, they were absolutely right about it. What about the game and the way it's being presented as a broadcaster yourself and everything? How do you see that development?
Well, it's gotten way better, right?
Yes.
Because you have this. You need the people behind the camera to have played the game, right?
Yep.
Or understand it. People in the production room, in the production truck, to understand this is not a good time to show a replay because something's going to happen. Or this is a good time. The broadcasters, when I'm broadcasting this summer for Fox for the World Cup, I know when it's a time to talk about a longer story and when it's time to shut up and just let the picture tell it, right? So that helps, and that's improved a lot.
One of the things, Landon, that I would like to see more of, and I don't know that they get it yet, is I'd like to see the human story. I remember when I had Willie Mays on as the first guest on Sports Byline when I launched in 1988.
Wow.
I didn't ask him how you hit a home run because the listeners couldn't relate to it. I couldn't relate to it. I said, Willie, you were a 16-year-old African-American kid growing up in Alabama, and you wanted to play a white man's sport. How tough was that?
Awesome.
That's an answer everybody wants to hear. I'd like to see more of that done because the relationship that fans really have to athletes and their teams are who they were on a human level.
So well said. And look, I'm I'm not here to promote my book that's coming out, but I have a book coming out next year, or in March, and when I started the process, I thought to myself, I can write a lot of soccer stories,
sure,
that people will be interested in, but that's not my story. My story is that I grew up in a 900 square foot home in Southern California with a single mom, dad not around, mom was raising three kids on a teacher's salary of $30,000, and how miraculous it was that I, through that, got out and became a professional soccer player. That's
right.
A story I think that people are like,
yeah,
it resonates, right? Because lots of Americans grow up in that kind of scenario.
Yeah,
right?
You're absolutely. That book is coming out in March. What's the title of it?
Landon.
Landon, that's a...
Just what we talked about, not Landon Donovan.
No.
Landon.
Just Landon. You are going to be with me for an hour to talk about that book.
I would love to.
You've got to promise me.
I would love to.
You know, because
I would love to.
Yeah, we've known each other for a very long time, and Darren Peck still has the soccer game with your autograph on it in his office.
That's right. Framed.
Do we have someone else? Okay. Take
All
a break.
Right. They're kicking us off.
No break. Landon,
right.
thank you very much, my friend.
And I would love to do that.
Yeah, we've known each other for a long time. Make sure somebody gets a hold of us so we can have you back.
Amen. And congrats on all you. This is awesome.
Thank you.
On all you've done.
Landon
Thank
Donovan
you.
With us here on Sports Byline. And again, America's greatest soccer player. A lot of people say that. Played in the MLS. and won a record 6 MLS Cups, and at one time was both the league's all-time top scorer with 145 goals and also assists. The Major League Soccer MVP Award has been named the Landon Donovan MVP Award in his honor.